Welcome back to Hero Hype. Surprise! I bet you didn't expect to hear us coming back, but here we are. I guess really, really quickly, a little bit about the plans that we have moving forward. We are going to be releasing a few episodes over the next couple of weeks. Expect to see some weeks where there are two episodes while we essentially catch up ahead of the season premieres in the fall. So we'll be doing episodes that are sort of split. This one's going to be split between Supergirl and The Flash. There'll be another one catching up on Arrow and Legends. We'll do one for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., a couple of the Netflix shows we've missed, one or two of the movies that have come out, but not all, because some are a little bit older, so we might have to come back to those later. But for the most part, we have a plan in place that will take us up to the fall premieres. We won't be going into episode specifics. We'll mostly be talking about themes on the shows rather than step-by-step kind of breaking down the episodes, because otherwise we and you would be here for an eternity, and I'm not sure that that would be helpful. But the other part of what is going to make this exciting is that in order to help keep us on track and make sure that we are on schedule and have a little bit of help, we've brought a new host on board. So, as always, I am Danya. I am joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And we are very pleased to introduce, though some of you, if you listen to Rewatchable, will already know her, Mai.
Hello.
Yeah. So Mai will be, either she will be like regular with the three of us, or if time zones don't permit, it'll be like, we'll probably be able to do more of a mix and match if we have scheduling issues or one of us needs to go on holiday, aka me, and I mess up the schedule. We now have a third regular host that, should I be away for any reason, or should one of us be away for any reason, we've now got someone who can step in and sort of keep everything going on a regular schedule. We will also hopefully bring in a couple of guest hosts as well here and there. So if any of you listen to Resistance Radio, it's kind of going more off the idea of that if one of us isn't available, we have a pool of hosts that we fill in so that we don't get off schedule. So we now have a better plan in place to make sure that we don't let the show disappear into the void, which is absolutely what happened. We were stuck in the Phantom Zone. I'm going with that. But I guess as a little bit of an update, if you've forgotten, you can still contact us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast, and send emails through to us at herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Mai has actually been very, very hard at work cleaning up the Gmail account, which ended up with a lot of buffer and Twitter spam in it, which was mostly just PR and marketing stuff that they'd been sending us. So that is now completely clear. We'll be able to see your emails if they come through. But I guess we should just really get into everything. We're not going to do brief history for the next couple of episodes until we come back with the shows when we hit the fall shows. We're just going to do rundowns of the shows. And like I said at the top of the episode, this is going to be all about Supergirl and The Flash. Next up, you will be hearing about us from Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. But I'm going to hand over to Caitlin to lead this part.
All right. So we're just going to talk about kind of general themes and thoughts about what was happening when we dropped off the map last time, which was around the mid-season finale period. And we all have many thoughts. So the first thing that we want to talk about with Supergirl is, well, let's say, first, before anything else, overall impression of Supergirl season 2. Danya, you first.
A significant downgrade from season 1 for me. And I had some issues with season 1 in terms of pacing and certain plot lines, but on the whole, I enjoyed season 1 a lot more. Season 2, for me, kind of fell into the trap of like this CW show formula that doesn't always work for me. And it just, there was a lot about it that I felt wasn't great, particularly a lot of sidelining of characters and focus on things that kind of just didn't feel right to me. So mostly, I guess in a word, disappointing.
All right, how about you, Mai? What were your overall impressions of Supergirl season two?
Pretty much the same. The best part was Alex. The rest felt both like it dragged and was rushed at the same time.
Yeah, I am in the same boat. I'm a big defender of Supergirl season one. I loved a lot of things about it. And season two took a lot of the things I really loved about season one and just threw them away. And I feel like a lot of the things they were doing aren't even like making it a CW show. It's like making it a caricature of a CW show at this point, because the majority of the CW shows like are superhero shows at this point. So a CW show can be whatever they want it to be. And it feels like by having such a huge focus on romance was not there before. And a lot of these things that they're sort of making like the caricature of what a CW show is, and it really didn't feel like it fit what they had established with the first season. So I'm with the both of you. I was also disappointed in season two. So let's get into, let's say, the main reason I think we were disappointed in season two, and that is, as Danya has phrased in our doc, the Daxamite in the room named Mon-El.
Yeah, I kind of was like, I was sitting there and trying to think of like things I wanted to talk about for Supergirl season two, particularly in the back half of Supergirl season two. And I was like, how do you phrase this? How do you just like, and I was like, it's the Daxamite in the room. Like that's the that's what it is. It's Mon-El. Like you said, the biggest part of why season two kind of fell down for me was Mon-El. And I do remember, and I haven't forgotten, that for a lot of the first half of season two, I did defend Mon-El quite a lot. I thought there was a lot of potential in who the character could be, the idea of the relationship between Krypton and Daxam, and that kind of overcoming that prejudice that they have against each other, and the idea of them being like the sole survivors of their respective planets. And like, there was a lot of potential in this storyline just in general without the romance. And I think the second that they decided to really push this romantic plot line with them, they kind of let a lot of what could have been incredibly interesting about Mon-El slip through the cracks. There was a lot to say about like the privilege of his upbringing as a prince, and a lot to say about like how that contrasted with Supergirl's sort of storyline with like how she was brought up in, especially when she got to Earth, a much more humble family setting, and this idea of like right and wrong and wanting to be a hero and all of that sort of stuff. And it wasn't like they completely didn't touch on any of it at all, but it was such a light touch that all of the nuance and the real interest that could have been in this storyline just fell completely flat, because all they wanted to do was build up this huge, like, Romeo and Juliet-esque drama and romantic drama between the two of them, particularly when the Daxamites come back and Mon-El's mother and father come back. And honestly, I just wasn't interested in the least, because there was no real nuance to it. And I'm like, I absolutely love romantic storylines. In fact, there is a lot of romance within the superhero genre in the comics and stuff like that that I actually really, really love, and it can be done incredibly well. It just wasn't in this instance, because I think Caitlin added this to the doc for us to talk about. It reduced Kara to the love interest in her own series. And that, I feel, for me, it was just a reduction of Kara's role in general that just didn't sit well with me at all. So there was so much potential for using Mon-El that I feel just wasn't achieved in the slightest. And it's infuriating, because in order to sort of pour all of the time that they did into focusing on Mon-El and Kara's relationship, everything else suffered as a result, because they needed to give all of that emotional resource to those two characters. And so we lost like a lot of focus that could have been on like James, who was basically a non-entity, and a little bit more of Lena and Kara's friendship, which was incredibly interesting. And then you have Jean and McGann and the idea of the Martians. Like, that was really interesting. But a lot of that was reduced significantly in order to just put the spotlight more on Mon-El. And for me, that was a huge problem.
All right. Mai, give us your thoughts on Mon-El.
I'm not sure there's anything left to say after that.
Whoops. I had to, like, apparently I've had this kind of, like, pent up for a while with no outlet.
I was just sitting and nodding along. I was like, yeah, preach it.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything Donya just said. I also would, say that, you know, you could follow the distinct arc that Mon-El went through, going from, you know, being really selfish and self-centered to making a very big sacrifice in the finale, which, you know, is, you know, character growth. So I will give them that. But the fact that he comes in after we talked about Kara breaking up with James for absolutely no reason, and every time someone has asked the showrunners about it, they've given a different reason about why they decided to break the two of them up. I've heard that they're better friends. I also heard at Comic-Con this year, they said they did it because they were just too good of people and they wouldn't have any conflict in their relationship. And, you know, they can't even give us a straight answer for why they decided to break Kara and James up. So that is really super sketchy. And then, you know, let's just not ignore the fact that you erased a person of color in James for bland white guy and made him the new love interest. That's just icky on so many levels. And just, I was really bothered by his basically replacing James and James becoming such a non-entity because the show moved basically to the DEO, like more than three quarters of the time in the season. And James being, you know, having taken over for Kat, is working at Catco. So he is not spending time at the DEO when everyone else is. He has no reason to be over there. So we just don't see him. And that, for a character that was such a central part of the first season, really rubs me the wrong way. And to tie that back to Mon-El, it's that Mon-El coming in really pushed him out of the way. No one else was sidelined in the way that James was. And James was basically replaced in like every way by his presence. And it's icky in a lot of ways. And that really bothered me and colored my view of that character.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that there was a way that they could have introduced Mon-El and had James there at the same time that didn't have this implication that Mon-El was replacing James. Like, it's not as though Kara couldn't have been doing more at Catco, and like the whole point or the purported point of this season and the reason in universe for why James and Kara broke up was that Kara felt like she needed to find her identity and find herself and kind of get to know her more than like balancing this who is Supergirl and who is Kara kind of aspects of her life. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But don't say that and then have her fall almost immediately into a romance with Mon-El, because that then completely invalidates that entire sort of argument that you've set up for yourself. And it was just really, really problematic for me on so many levels. And for me, it was a lot of frustration because I didn't think Mon-El in general was like a bad idea for a character. In terms of like when you kind of like narrow it down to the basics of who that character is and how he's basically a foil for everything that Supergirl stands for, it was such an interesting thing to introduce, have kind of almost play off each other and kind of like move through the series together. But because they then just kind of took, like I said, the nuance out of it and made it like this weird dramatic romance, it just stopped working. And then it just came across really, really terribly in the, like, James just wasn't there. He wasn't there. And it frustrated me because he's such an interesting character. Particularly as he's like one of Kara's strongest ties in universe back to Clark. And it's tying those two worlds together. And so there's a lot about it that just didn't work for me. And it's all well and good as well to talk about his kind of development from the beginning of the series all the way up to his sacrifice at the end. But as we've learned since the season finale, as is the way with many, many superhero shows, and I will not give them a pass on this, is that that sacrifice is basically redundant because he's coming back. You know, they are finding a way to bring him back to the series. So therein lies another problem in that, is it really a sacrifice at the end of the day? You know, it kind of undermines that idea of what he did by bringing him back so easily. I don't know when we're going to see him in the next season, but we know that we are. And it's the same problem that I have with deaths in the Marvel universe. You know, there is no death within the Marvel cinematic universe that I feel is done in any way that kind of makes any sense or has gravity to it, because they come back. They either come back or it turns out they're not really dead, or just something happens to bring them back. And I know that's a huge part of the comic book genre, but some of them have to stick. Some of these sacrifices have to actually mean something. In fact, I think the only death that has really stuck and had consequences and been like a true sacrifice without finding some way of bringing the character back at all was Quicksilver in Age of Ultron. I can't really think off the top of my head of one that in some way hasn't had like a resurrection of sorts. It's frustrating. It's really, really frustrating because
just thinking of Tommy Merlin.
Lincoln. Shield.
From Agents of Shield.
Yeah. Oh god, I completely forgot Lincoln was a character that existed. I'm terrible.
Yeah. I was gonna call him Romeo from Home and Away, so
I guess there are a handful more. You know what? I think Tommy's is probably then the most successful. But, like, yeah, again, you know, when it comes to a sacrifice like that, like, it's not going to stick. So he's coming back. And therein, we're going to have the same problem again with the next season in that he's being reintroduced. So when he comes back, who's going to get pushed out of the frame in order to make space for him? Because we know that he's going to be, when he comes back, he's going to be a huge focus again. So I don't see that they're actually going to address the concerns that people have had. They are very much in full steam ahead with this, and they seem to just have these blinkers on and not really care about like any of the kind of criticism or the discussion that has happened around it, because they like it, and so everyone else is going to have to like it or kind of just don't watch, I guess.
It would be nice.
And Melissa Benoist is dating Chris Wood.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other bit of this whole thing that's kind of really uncomfortable, in that that has happened on every single show that she's been on as well. She has ended up in a relationship with her romantic co-star. And in this particular instance, she's divorced her husband and gotten together with, is Chris Wood his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, that's also like that, just it's really uncomfortable to watch for me, because I find it really hard to separate those two things. And it shouldn't be difficult to separate those two things. But because the romance for me isn't successful and doesn't work and doesn't take me out of that mindset to make me kind of like forget that these are like, forget that this is Melissa Benoist and Chris Wood, because it's not successful, all I'm thinking of is that as well. So for me, it just gets really uncomfortable.
Yeah, what I struggle with is the feeling that Mon-El was written as a one-season character. Like, they gave him a complete arc with a, you know, redemption at the end, and they, like, made Earth completely uninhabitable to his species. Like, he was very much written with this one-season arc. So his return feels very much tied into their relationship, and that makes me feel icky.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, completely agree. Because here's the thing, so many people are split on Mon-El. There are obviously people who do love him as a character and do love this relationship. And you know what? I'm not going to take that away from you. If that's something that you enjoy and something that you love, then that's great. We all derive different things that we love and are interested in from all of these shows. And, you know, that reading of it is entirely valid, but equally there are things about it, whether you love it or not, that come across in not a particularly great way. Yeah. Again, it's just one of those things where it's like, it's really frustrating. I think that's the biggest thing for me. I'm just like frustrated as hell because it was like, if it was just a one and done story for him, then it was maybe not completely satisfying for me, but at least it was a good, it had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and a definitive end to it. And now that we know that it's not and he's coming back, then it just kind of makes that all fall flat for me. So there's he's coming back because they want him back, and it's more, I feel like, their personal preference and their personal opinions on the actor and what they think that relationship works like, rather than what actually works for the show. And I don't think that they've worked out and been able to, like, untangle what those two things mean.
It's like the Arrow writers being infatuated with John Barrowman, but having nothing to do for Malcolm for, like, 3 seasons.
Yeah.
So, awkward. But, go ahead, Mai.
I just wish that Kara could have a male friend who wasn't interested in her romantically, who wasn't related to her, because that hasn't happened.
I feel like yet, that's I what think. They're going to make James now.
Yeah, that's but then does late. That count? Yeah, I was going to say, does that count because they have been romantically linked and he has had feelings for her at one point or another, but like...
Same with Wynn.
Yeah, no, I get... Yeah, same with Wynn.
And... Cat's son, you know, Melissa's ex.
Yes. No, I
meet
get
a guy
that
you don't want to be with in that way. Mm. Please have a friend.
I guess they're Jean.
He's their dad.
I know, but he's about the only male in that situation without romantic connections in any way to Kara.
Yeah, that, so that doesn't true. Count either.
It's awkward. It's awkward.
Let Supergirl have friends.
What? We can't do that. This is the CW, apparently.
Everyone is beautiful and in love.
Grumble, grumble.
Yeah. But Mon-El's presence is especially important because it is central to the big fight at the end, which is the Daxamite invasion, where... Surprise! Mon-El was the prince. Nobody saw that coming, except everybody saw that coming.
Oh, boy.
And Kara was pissed at him for lying about it for a hot second and then got over it way too fast because of the musical, which we will talk about.
Yeah.
But Mon-El's parents come and want to bring him back because there are apparently surviving Daxamites around the universe. Mon-El's like, nah, I'm good. I'm gonna stay here, be a better person. And so Rhea murders her husband and then invades Earth to make it a new Daxamite. So, you know, that's cool, whatever. So we've got this whole plot of basically Kara's potential mother-in-law trying to invade her new home, which is just lovely. How did we feel about this plotline?
I mean, I mostly didn't care.
That was same.
That was the biggest problem with me, is because I feel like I wasn't necessarily invested in the Kara and Mon-El story, the drama that was being kind of drummed up by this kind of, like I said, Romeo and Juliet-esque storyline, where it's like there's tension between like the people of Earth versus the people of Daxam, and like I didn't feel any real threat from it. I didn't feel like, I don't know, it was just kind of a, okay, I guess this is what we're doing. I know that that was what they'd been building up, because obviously they dropped so many hints about Mon-El and that there were people looking for him and so on and so forth. But because I wasn't that invested in the character, I just didn't care when it came to actually seeing that story through to its conclusion. I didn't necessarily hate it. There was some like things that spun off the game, you know, at least fairly interesting to an extent, you know, stuff like Lena's involvement. That was, again, I have like a minor issue with that, in that they're doing this sort of tug of war kind of will she, won't she end up being like a Luther like the rest of her family. But that relationship was actually fairly interesting between Lena and Mon-El's mother. So there were like little glimmers of things that I was like, ah, actually, that's kind of vaguely interesting. And it was nice to see sort of Clark come back as a consequence of that storyline. But mostly I was just kind of like, I guess, okay, sure. Honestly, I think for me, what I would have loved a lot more, and what I feel like might have had a lot more emotional resonance, would have been something more along the lines of a Martian invasion, like a full-scale Martian invasion. Because we've had that idea, we had that idea set up of the Green Martians versus the White Martians all the way back in season one. And there was a lot of threads there, and you built up to McGann and everything that happened between Jean and McGann. Like, for me, something that would have been a lot more interesting would have been something along the lines of a full-scale Martian invasion. But, you know, that's not what we got.
I was expecting things to kind of play out the way they did with the invasion, and then all the different groups that had been established earlier in the season having to come together to fight it. But I was expecting there to be a lot more consequence with Cadmus. Like, I was expecting there to be a lot more of Cadmus going to the population at large and being like, look, we told you the aliens were a threat. Now they're trying to invade your planet. I was expecting a lot more consequence there. And maybe that's something we'll see in the next season, but I was expecting this to have significantly more tie in to Cadmus, basically, because there was so much of Cadmus in the first half of the season. How about you, Mai? What were your thoughts on the Daxamite invasion?
I wanted it to be over. I didn't care much about any of it. Sorry.
Yeah, I just,
that's succinct.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it was obviously, like you said, it was obviously going there. I just wish that they hadn't.
It's one of those things that felt really rushed, but also dragged.
Yeah, they spent so long being like, they're coming.
Yeah.
But then they show up and it moves too quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, I don't know, I think there was a lot of potential in the story that they set up, and it fell flat in the execution. That was, like, I think it could have been a lot better than it was. And by the time Mon-El is getting in his pod, atmosphere has all this lead in it now, which you'd think might cause issues at some point, but they're probably just going to ignore that happened. you know, I just was like, oh my god, make him leave already. They're, like, making this, like, this heartbreaking moment, and I'm like, leave already! So I was having the completely opposite reaction they were going for by the end of the season. But how did we feel, like, Donya mentioned Clark coming back. How did we feel about Clark beating him in a fight and them telling us, like, six times that she's stronger than he is?
I actually really liked seeing Clark come back. I actually think it's a really interesting dynamic, especially because the way that they play it on the show is that Clark isn't the main character. He's not the focus. He's very much respected and a symbol of
on this earth, but at the same time, why, when he's still there, it's still obviously Kara's story, and he's usually there as either just emotional support or just backup or something like that, but he never takes over, which I feel like is the complete opposite of what Mon-El did.
Yeah, I was
when
just
he was
about
introduced
to say.
Yeah, so there's this really interesting dynamic in like how these two characters were have been introduced within Kara's sphere. So I feel like Clark's introduction, and considering he's such, like, for a lot of people, like, Superman is like an icon, including the fans. Any DC fan, like, Superman is an icon. Mon-El may be less well known, but it was really interesting how when these characters have entered Kara's sphere, Clark, who is this hugely popular, iconic character, takes away less of the focus from Kara than Mon-El does. And the way that they set it up with that fight with Kara beating him just almost reinforces that, that Kara is actually the hero of this show and this story, and there is an aspect to her that gives her that extra power. It was just, it was really nice. It was really incredibly cool because I actually like Tyler Hoechlin's Clark Kent, and I really like Tyler Hoechlin's Superman. I think he's actually quite successful within the scope of Supergirl. But it was just very interesting to me to see how these two characters work, like him and Mon-El work alongside Kara. But for me, like, I was incredibly happy to see him back because I just love their dynamic. I really love the way that they interact. I really like how he works on the show. Like, there's so much potential for how they could continue to have him coming back without, and they've managed to prove multiple times that having him in the show isn't going to take away from Kara's storyline. It's only ever going to enhance it or kind of back it up or anything like that. So I actually really enjoyed seeing him back. I thought it was, like, for me, fairly successful, and I always got a lot of joy out of seeing him on screen with Kara, whether they're fighting together or whether they're fighting against each other.
Yeah, that's
agreed.
A better answer.
Yeah, I did think it was a little clunky the way that they just kept being like, and Kara is so clearly superior, like, okay, we get it, she won the fight, we can be a little less clunky in our writing, but the overall message, I think, is good. And I hope we see plenty more of Tyler Hoechlin in the upcoming seasons because his Clark is delightful.
He really is, though. He is, I think he just fits the tone of the show really well. And I actually just really like, I just really love his Superman and his Clark. And I've
hopeful.
Said it. Yeah, I've said it before and I've said it again. I really, really wish that some of the material that he got and some of the way that he operates and works, I wish that some of the same stuff had been given to Henry Cavill in the movie universe, because I am a huge fan of Henry Cavill. I absolutely love him.
Man from Uncle.
Yeah, that's that Man from Uncle has a very significant part to play in why I love Henry Cavill as much as I do. Not entirely, but like a massive part of it. But he's actually a really good actor. I really like him. I just don't think he's been given the right material. And it just, yeah, I just really love this universe's Clark. And I hope we see more of him.
Agreed. So look, we did say something positive about this season. Isn't that good?
You know,
really like
there
how
are
they approach Superman.
Yeah, there are some other things that I think I like that I feel quite positive about. We'll probably get onto it in a second, but like Alex and Maggie's relationship, I thought that as like the romantic thread throughout the season was actually more successful for me than Kara romance. And again, like Lena and Kara's friendship, like I really loved that and the way that they went with that. They were just like, here's the thing. The female relationships on this show are so much stronger and interesting. So the one between Alex and Maggie, the one between Lena and Kara, and then the one between Kara and Alex, like those are the relationships for me that continue to like drive the show and make it really interesting and set it apart. Because a lot of how it works for me is obviously Alex and Maggie's relationship is just very, very interesting. It was very equal. They were partners. They were open with each other and honest, and they communicated for the most part with a couple of hiccups here and there. But for the most part, they actually were really open in their communication with each other. Lena and Kara's friendship were very much, again, a women kind of backing each other up and holding each other up and kind of supporting each other. And it was, particularly with their backgrounds, respectively, it was really interesting to see that. And then obviously Kara and Alex's relationship as sisters, and especially when Jeremiah was reintroduced, like the sort of conflict that came in with that and the drama that came in with that was a lot more interesting to me. So it's like the female relationships in this show are what I feel like it should be focusing on a lot more, because it's so much more interesting. And considering the rest of the shows on the CW, there aren't as many that have female relationships like this as many diverse female relationships on it. And I feel like that's Supergirl's strength, and they should be playing into it more, like a hell of a lot more. But a lot of those relationships kind of took a little bit of a backseat to the Mon-El storyline, and that's really frustrating for me, because that kind of relationship that Mon-El and Kara had, you can go to like most other shows on the air right now and find something, if not almost a carbon copy, it can be almost identical or as close as it possibly can be to like the storyline that played out just within a different universe or a different specific scenario. Whereas the relationships, the female relationships on this show, the female friendships, the female romances, and the sisterly relationships, that is Supergirl's true strength. And they did not give it enough focus this season to really capitalize on that and set itself apart as much as it had been doing. Instead, it played into, I guess, tropes and expected relationships that just kind of made it a show that was very samey, rather than playing into what really made me fall in love with it in the first place, which is the women. Basically, there are the what little we got, I loved, but it was way too little.
This is actually a complaint I had about Alex and Maggie, along with Kara and Mon-El. So I guess we can jump into Alex and Maggie towards the end of the season. The focus on romance in general, whether it was Kara and Mon-El or Alex and Maggie, period, was that it kept Alex and Kara away from each other and on both ends. So as much as I really enjoyed Alex's arc in this season and thought they was very powerful, I think there was just straight up too much focus on romance for both of the sisters. Like, that needs to be in the background. Like, in season one, it worked a lot better because we had the Kara and James things kind of in the background, but it was always in the background. It never became the focus of the show, but you could see things moving, whereas the romance for both Alex and Kara became central at multiple points. And there were multiple episodes in the season where in season one, you would have had Kara and Alex like sitting on the couch talking to each other about the events of the episode. And in this season, they were in their separate apartments talking to their partners. And that just, I don't know, they have such a unique bond that I feel like anyone who is with one of them would understand should understand the importance of that relationship. So I feel like the show really does need to push that romance to the back burner. And I have a feeling we will be seeing that because Maggie's actress is not going to be a regular next season. You know, I am all for Maggie and Alex, but I need Alex and Kara to be the central relationship. And that was a downfall for just kind of all the romance in general on the show for me.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that maybe the Alex and Maggie relationship would have worked a lot more in balance if they hadn't dedicated equal amounts of time between both relationships, Kara and Mon-El, and Alex and Maggie, which meant that something had to give. And it was both individual characters and other relationships that had to give. And then they lost the thing that really made the core of that show in the first season, which was Alex and Kara. Like, that was what was so beautiful about the show. And I feel like if they'd scaled back and balanced it out a little bit more, you could have had, like, and Alex and Maggie's relationship was beautiful. I really, really did love it. But a lot of stuff fell victim to the romance on this show. A lot of stuff kind of got cut and put to the sidelines in order to make room for it. Like we said, James was a huge part of that. And, like, this whole idea of turning him into, like, a vigilante as guardian didn't really work, mostly because there wasn't enough time spent with it. And it was very much a way to bring him back into the storyline. But again, it was very brief moments. Like, for most of the episodes, you barely saw him. And so it just, as interesting as that could have been, it just didn't work. So, yeah, a lot of stuff just kind of fell to the wayside to make room for that romance. And while absolutely did Alex and
super
together,
friends.
I completely do not disagree with the fact that I feel like in order to make Alex and Maggie's relationship as successful as it was, it kind of meant that Kara and Alex's relationship had to fall to the wayside a little bit. And it could have worked. I mean, honestly, and I hate to say it, if they'd have just not gone with a Mon-El and Kara romance, I feel like the entire thing would have been more successful, because then you could have a lot of the scenes that would have been dedicated to building up the romantic drama between those two could have been dedicated to Alex and Kara instead.
I think my other issue is that Alex was reduced a bit as a love interest in the season, because with all the stuff with Jeremiah going on, like, I feel like not enough space was given to that and the emotional ramifications. So I think they really just needed to scale the romance completely back for all the plot they were trying to ram into it, because I was really disappointed with how little room we got emotionally for all the Jeremiah and Cadmus stuff.
Unpopular opinion?
Please share.
Maybe they should have scaled down the amount of plot?
That too. They did have a lot going on.
Yeah, they do that across the board. I always feel like that. Like, they're trying to cram in as much as they can. It's not they're getting cancelled.
No, it's true. It's not like they needed to have as many. They didn't need to be spinning as many plates as they were. And as is always the way, if you're trying to spin an infinite number of plates, like, some of them are just gonna crash and and break. And yeah, a lot of that did actually happen in this season of Supergirl. It was very disappointing. Like, the Jeremiah stuff should have been so hugely important and so much more than it actually was, and it just, again, was like a flash in a pan kind of thing, and just ended almost as soon as it began, and there was no real emotional resonance that kind of came from it. It was just very one and done, almost. There was a lot that I feel like if they'd taken the time to, like, really sit down and look at it, they could have threaded in some of, like, that storyline and then brought it back in season three.
Yeah.
But because they were just like, we have to have everything, it's got to be, like, we've got to have the music meister, and we've got to have this, and we've got to have this, and we've got to have that. And it was like, whoa, you know, edit, scale it back a little bit, find the real cause of what the story is that you want to tell this season, bring in a couple of additional story threads that support your main thread through, like, your main arc from start to finish. And then bring in some smaller, like, B-plot threads that really reinforce and support that. But because we were just all over the place all season, with everything else just kind of, like, piling on top again, it just turned out as a bit of a mess. I was really disappointed because this season had so much potential, and it just didn't. It didn't meet it. It didn't meet that potential for me, anyway.
I feel like a lot of the time they're afraid to invest the proper time in their storylines. They want to get it done as quickly as possible and move on.
They want to flash through it.
Nah.
But ching.
Oh,
yeah,
dear.
I agree.
I'm the fastest plot alive.
That's basically it. Speaking of fastest plot alive, James as Guardian, who had 5 seconds of screen time the entire season.
Why even agonize
like,
about telling anyone?
I really like this development. What?
I mean, why even agonize about telling Kara?
I know. This whole thing, like, I think this is a really interesting place for him, and it kind of makes sense. I can make it work in my head for that being a development for him. And I know we talked about it when it first happened. And I really loved, like, one of my favorite things about this season was the development of the friendship between James and Wynn, because Wynn was helping James as Guardian, as his man in the van. Like, I really enjoyed the development of that friendship when they were a little antagonistic last season because of Kara and their feelings for Kara. This season, like, they genuinely became friends, and I just loved seeing that, and I wanted more. Like, we just needed more James, basically.
Friendship is magic.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that, because the thing is that we spent so much time at Catco last season, and Cat Grant was such a huge character, especially with, like, being in this mentor role for Kara, and especially because she was just so strong of a character, and the influence that, like, Catco just has in general is huge in terms of, like, public opinion and stuff like that. And so Catco still plays a hugely important part in the Supergirl sort of mythos, like this idea of the series. And so when James was kind of like promoted, I thought that was an interesting role for him, because Catco isn't like this small little insignificant kind of tabloid or whatever. It is like, it holds a lot of sway. And so, you know, even within the Catco kind of environment, we spent a lot more time with Snapper than we did with James, when James should have been the core of that entire sort of location that we were in. Like, there was so much that could have been done there. But again, even within his sort of purview as, like, leading Catco, he fell to the wayside to Snapper Carr, which Snapper was, like, the whole thing with Snapper was fairly interesting in terms of, like, journalism. He's, like, the old guard of journalism. But the thing that, like, and putting him, like, as a foil to Kara in that sort of field as, like, a young woman within journalism facing up against the old guard of journalism who want to uphold, like, the same views and traditions that have always been there. Like, that was another really interesting thing that could have been done. The problem is that a lot of Snapper's stuff meant that he actually had more journalistic integrity than...
He was always right.
And I didn't... Like, here's the thing, is that he didn't always have to be right either, because there was an interesting story that could have been told there had they... They were trying to frame it as though Kara was in the right, but a lot of the time I was thinking, no, actually... If I was an editor and she was doing what she was doing, I would have fired her.
Let's not forget the fact that Kara decided she wanted to be a journalist as her life's calling, and then shows up at Catco every, like, 6 episodes, too. Like, if this is your full-time job, you should be there full-time.
Yeah. It was a little bit infuriating. But yeah, James got sidelined in every single storyline, including the one that should have been really his, which was the Catco stuff. He should have been leading that, heading that up, but he became a non-entity in everything, and it's just a huge failing on the series just in general, the fact that they don't seem to know what to do with James, because they pushed him aside, because he's not Kara's love interest anymore, because he's not connected to her in that respect, they seem to just not know what to do with him at all. And it's really frustrating because he has a lot of potential, both as a vigilante, his role in Catco, and his connection to Clark. Like, there are some really fantastic threads that they've got there that they're just not capitalizing on, and it's frustrating.
Not to mention, there was no good reason for them to really break up. Like, they should have stayed together.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're saying they couldn't come up with good stories, that means they're bad writers.
Yeah, that's a failing on their part, not a failing on Kara and James. Because there were, like, I really love their interactions. I think they work really, really well together. I was fairly invested in the two of them and where that relationship would go. But if you can't write them, then that is not their fault. That is the writer's fault. And I feel like that's the same with a lot of stuff on Supergirl in general. It's more a failing in the writing, and I think they got lazy in some parts of it, and it just drove me a little nuts. So,
I mean, they wanted to tackle all these, like, immigration things. Like, you've got a Black president of this major media company. You don't think you could explore James and Black Lives Matter or anything like that? Like, there's a whole lot going on. Come on.
There was so much that had, if they were turned on to it and were very socially kind of aware, I guess, of, like, everything going on around them and everything that could have played into it, and particularly with James as a character in general, there were so many parallels between the stories that they were trying to tell and James as a Black man, and they just didn't really draw those parallels at all because they just didn't utilize him as a character. And it just, like, it's just not great. It's really, really, really not great at all.
And they were, like, trying to be like, look how socially conscious we are. Like, one of their episode titles was Nevertheless, She Persisted. Like, their whole immigration thing was about the immigration. Like, they were, like, very superficially conscious of social issues.
Yeah, so Supergirl, I'm probably not gonna be very popular for saying this, but I'm gonna say it anyway because apparently that's who I am. Supergirl has the problem in that it upholds white feminism above all else. And with that come a lot of things that, while they are trying to drive a narrative on it, they are not doing it in any successful way because they're coming at it from a particularly white female lens to it. And maybe not even a white female lens, just a white lens in general. So they're trying to be socially conscious. They are trying to tell these storylines and draw parallels, but they're doing it entirely from a white perspective. And it just doesn't work because it's a very privileged view of everything, and it just falls flat. Not saying that in their intention, what they're doing and what they're trying to say is very good, but because they're doing it from a very narrow viewpoint and they're sidelining their characters of color a lot of the time, or at least minimizing their roles for the white characters on the show, it just narrows that focus down and it just puts it in a very privileged lens. So it's a lot of the same problem that we have right now with people resisting the current political climate. Like, a lot of what is palatable to people is only when it comes through a white lens. So it kind of has a lot of the same problems. So that was a lot of other things that made me really uncomfortable with Supergirl this season, is that while it was trying to be socially conscious, it was coming from a very specific white viewpoint. And, you know, I'm as white as they freaking come. Like, I'm pale as heck. And if I can see that, and if I can feel uncomfortable with it, then why the hell are none of the people in that room, that writer's room, or editing it or pulling it all together, why can they not see it as well? Like, this should be getting picked up long before it ever makes screens. And they have the opportunity to be able to adjust that. And they have the characters in place already. in order to be able to address it from a viewpoint that isn't white. And yet, do I have any faith that they will do it? Probably not. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see.
All right, so just briefly, we've talked a bit about Lena and Kara, but I know I know Donya enjoyed it. How about you, Mai? How'd you feel about their friendship?
I wish they were more.
So we've got a Supercorp fan. Is it Supercorp? I'm pretty sure it is Supercorp, isn't it, that they call it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a Supercorp fan over here.
I just really, really like them a lot. As friends or, you know, whatever.
And I think, like I said a little bit earlier in the episode, like, that relationship just has so much potential. It's just an interesting dynamic considering their backgrounds. Both Kara's connection to Clark and then obviously Lena's connection to the Luthers. Like, for me, that's the more interesting kind of, not Romeo and Juliet, but that kind of, like, in terms of, obviously because Lena doesn't know that Kara is connected to Superman, but we know as an audience. So that kind of taboo, that kind of friendship that shouldn't be, like, that is a lot more interesting to me, particularly because both of them are trying to separate themselves from the legacies of their family. Kara setting herself apart from Superman and Lena setting herself apart from the Luther family. Like, that is so interesting to me. And again, like, it fell to the wayside a little bit, and it has so much about it that could be incredibly interesting that they just don't capitalize on because they tried to put too much into this season, or they just focused on one relationship more than any other, which was Kara and Mon-El. And so a lot of other stuff just fell to the wayside. And that was one of them. But like Lena and Kara's friendship and relationship just in general, there's so much there that could be really interesting, but they just didn't push forward with it as much as I would have liked. Maybe that might change next season, considering that Katie McGraw, who plays Lena, has been upgraded to a series regular, so there is a lot more potential next season for her to become a bigger focus. But if Mon-El is coming back, I wonder how long that'll last.
We will see. I think that is one of the most interesting dynamics that is going, because they are clearly good friends, but they both have kind of these things they're keeping from each other, because I think they're going to keep, as long as they can do it, like, keep us guessing whether Lena's gonna turn or not. And I think at Comic-Con, Katie McGrath said that, like, that's the dynamic that works best with her, is you're just never quite sure if she's gonna go and turn into her brother or not. So I find it very interesting to find out in the season that she biologically is a Luther, which we didn't know at the beginning of the season, which is kind of interesting. And that was the reason Lillian hated her, was she was the product of, what, did they use Lionel in the show too, I think?
Yeah.
His infidelity.
I wonder who the mom is. That was kind of
interesting. That would be interesting if they played with that.
I hope they do.
But because then it brings in, like, this, like, the idea of family, found and blood, and that kind of...
That's the same as Kara.
Yeah, so it's like that sort of, it's a parallel. There's just so much interest in that storyline that could play out in a really cool way, but I guess we have to wait and see which way they go with it.
I just really enjoy the effort they make to try to be friends.
And I mean, even then, it's like, I think they just had an instant connection, because I feel like there's such a similarity in them, in how they've sort of grown up a little bit in, like, these situations where they're trying to set themselves apart from these legacies, whether they both know it of each other or not, because it's within them, they kind of recognize that in each other. So I feel like that connection is really, really strong and really, really interesting. But yeah, I want to see them play with that a lot more.
Well, by the end of this season, we saw Lena is still on the side of the Angels, while her mother is still, or her adoptive mother is still loose. So we will see where that goes next season and beyond. And then just briefly, we also saw the return of McGann in the finale with, she brought some of the white Martians who had similar viewpoints to her. So she's finding Martians like her in her work on Mars. And so she and John are continuing a long distance relationship, I guess. But the actress who plays McGann was cast on a pilot, so I have no idea how much we're going to see of her going forward. Which is kind of disappointing, because yeah, that was another plot that had a lot of potential that just got dropped.
Yeah, it really, really did. I mean, like I was saying, I really would have liked something more like a kind of like continuation of the Martian storyline over the Daxamite thing, because that had been set up so early on in like season one. It had so much more to it that could have been like, that could have throughout season two, if you kept pulling at that thread, could have culminated in something really interesting by the season finale. But instead they tried to have both, in the like the green Martian versus white Martian thing plus the Daxamite thing, and I feel like they could have just focused on it would have been far more interesting, but hey, whatever. It is what it is.
Indeed. All right, so the last thing we obviously have to touch on for Supergirl, and that kind of takes us into our next topic, is the musical crossover with The Flash.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I had the most mixed feelings about this episode. I loved like the premise, and Darren Criss was delightful, and I like that they've set it up that he could come back at any time, and I really enjoyed all the singing and dancing, and all the costumes were great, and it was a lot of fun, but the whole plot, it was basically a plot to get Kara to forgive Mon-El, was just such utter BS that ruined a lot of my enjoyment of the episode. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I, like, the actual musical part of it, really enjoyed. Really loved Darren Criss, thought he was fantastic, but again, it was the idea of what the episode was leading to. It kind of was rushing through that whole bringing Mon-El and Kara back together again, that romance storyline that just didn't work for me. And because that was basically the emotional core of the episode, it just didn't work for me at all, because I just didn't care. I didn't want them to get back together. I didn't want them to like figure out their feelings. I didn't like, I was not interested in that at all. So because I didn't have that emotional connection to the central storyline and where they were going with it, while I felt like it was quite fun, and there were some moments in it that I just thought were ridiculous, and you could tell like how much they enjoyed making that episode. And like aesthetically, I thought it was kind of neat as well. And I mean, everyone is just so good musically as well. Like, they're so talented. They have some incredible vocal talent on that show. But it still wasn't enough for me to carry it entirely because of just what the storyline was just in general. But it was really nice seeing Darren Criss singing. So, I mean, I will willingly admit that in that I'm a little bit shallow. You know, if Darren Criss is up there having fun and singing and just generally enjoying himself, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, same.
My glee ship has always been Sebastian and Blaine, so I had a little bit of that part.
I knew that. I was thinking about that.
So I quite enjoyed that, and there were some nice Blaine and Sebastian gift sets that followed on my Tumblr dash, which I quite enjoyed after that.
Were there really? And you didn't share these like with the class? Like,
and Marley was delighted.
Yes. And loved Jeremy Jordan, because he has an amazing voice. And can we talk about Iris having two dads in the alternate universe, which was amazing.
Yeah, there were so many little touches to the musical crossover that were great, and I loved them. But I think it was just because that central premise was, like, yeah. the idea of getting Kara and Mon-El back together that I was just
and
like...
Barry and Iris.
Yeah, but that I can... Like, Barry and Iris, I can understand a lot more because that relationship has been, like, there from season one of The Flash, pretty much. Like, give or take. So... I can get on board with the Barry and Iris aspect of it a little bit more, but it was the Kara and Mon-El part of it, and this whole, like, just, it was a little bit stupid. I felt like the whole thing was a little bit contrived, but there were parts of the musical crossover that were just so great.
Oh, I really loved in the, like, real world when, you know, you had to have Kid Flash and Vibe, like, fighting off Music Meister, and when Jean reveals his alien form for the first time. I found that utterly delightful as well. So there were so many things about it that I really liked, but yeah, it's just that. And it was right after Kara found out that Mon-El was the prince and he'd been lying this whole time. And I was so proud of her for breaking up with him over lying about this, because girl deserves better than that. And then they just, like, completely reversed directions with it in a way that just did not feel earned in any way. So that just, yeah, undercuts a lot of my enjoyment. I'd rather Barry get together than anything, because they have delightful chemistry.
They do. They really, really do. But
the I'm Your Super Friend is totally my favorite.
Yeah,
so
I...
cute.
Absolutely loved that. It was so great. But yeah, no, I agree. Like, Kara and Barry have, like, an amazing relationship that I'm, like, stupidly invested in. And considering how many episodes they've spent together, like, that is a testament to, like, the chemistry between those actors. Like, it's just on point between the two of them. And it's just so, so, so interesting.
Ice cream.
That moment still. I love that moment.
I like to say that Barry and Felicity are platonic soulmates, but Barry and Kara have a very strong connection that I love as well.
It's a little less platonic.
Yes.
Yeah. Agreed.
But yeah, so musically delightful and wonderful and fun. Plot-wise, maybe less so.
Yeah.
All right, any final thoughts on the crossover before we jump into our feelings on The Flash this season?
No, let's go. Let's do this. There's a lot of stuff about The Flash that I similarly, like, was like, about, but I feel like I have less to say about The Flash other than,
So our theme for this episode is basically delightful shows that were highly disappointing this year. And that runs on into this season of The Flash. The whole Savitar thing. And my favorite thing, and I, like, tweeted this and posted it on Tumblr, and it is still getting notes, that remember at the very beginning of the season in Flashpoint when Barry had Eobard locked up and he's doing the "now who's the villain, Flash?" And I was like, he knew the whole time that Barry was the villain.
Yeah, that moment, you're just like there going, nice little bit of foreshadowing there, guys.
He knew all along.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Savitar. So this was so convoluted in the explanation of, like, how Savitar came to be, but he was a version of Barry. He was one of the time remnants of Barry. And then there was just, like, this whole weird cycle of, like, Savitar needing to make sure he comes into existence and for some reason needs to kill Iris to do it. And I just, my brain still hurts trying to figure out how that worked and everything. And I just, time travel make my head hurt.
I mean, the time
travel... Savitar was Barry with a Zuko scar, basically.
Yeah, the time travel just in general, like, just in the Flash in general, I feel like we've gotten to the point where Barry should know better about time traveling. And even after the entire thing with Flashpoint and everything that happened with that, he was still time traveling. Like, he never stopped. And I just feel like, I mean, I guess Savitar is a consequence of that. And obviously the finale with the Speed Force and the sort of everything that, like, all of everything that fell out of, like, this whole Flashpoint stuff. Like, there was some consequence to it. And yet, he's still time traveling. Like, I feel like it doesn't matter. And so it's like, what the heck? Why do they just keep going with this? Because there's... I think the other thing that I found with this season as well is too many speedsters. Way too many. Oh, I feel like they're oversaturating the series with speedsters, and I think they need to rein it in a little bit because it's getting overwhelming to the point where I'm just like, oh, it's another speedster. And like, the ones that we've got are fine, but also then they're just, it's just getting too much, and I feel like they need to rein it in a little bit.
They're using them up.
Yeah.
Where was Jesse in the finale? Why did they not go get Jesse to come back for the finale?
Like,
use your resources.
Yeah.
Maybe she, like, was off doing something smarter.
Probably. Like, he was hoping, right? I don't know. It just, for me, it was kind of one of those things where I was like, again, another series that had so much potential at the start of it, and by the end, I was just, like, really glad. Like, both The Flash and Supergirl, by the end of it, I was really glad that the season was over, because I was just like, okay, I kind of want to just draw a line in it and go into the next season, like, afresh and be like, okay, it's at least it's done, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like my biggest issue with The Flash this season, because there were, I thought, some really good individual episodes, like the Grodd two-parter and the one where Barry recruits Leonard, Leonard from season one of Legends, to help him, like, defeat King Shark. Like, all of that, like, there were individual things I really liked. Individual episodes that I really liked, but the whole of the season was just so dark. And this show is supposed to be my happy, fun place. Like, it's supposed to be light and joy, like, so full of joy. Barry is supposed to like being the Flash, and he didn't seem to like being the Flash this season. Like, he's supposed to be just so joyful when he's running and everything, and I didn't feel any of that this season, and I want to watch The Flash and have fun. And I was not, for the most part, except for a few exceptions, having fun. It was so dark.
It really, really was. There was a lot of darkness to the show. And that's not to say that it can't work, but I feel like the balance wasn't there. So they didn't have enough about it that was countering that. It was just like, it just sucked the joy out of everything. There was nothing about it that felt joyful. There were a couple of episodes that were incredible. The Grodd two-parter, I have very few, if any, complaints with that. And also, again, the episode where Barry recruited season one of Legends, Leonard's, to come and help. And, like, that also was a very successful episode for me. But like you said, there was just nothing that I could find joyful in it. It just, tuning into it week on week on week felt like an exercise in losing your happiness slowly over the course of an hour. And I have enough of that in my day-to-day life. I don't need that in the shows that I'm watching as well. And so for me, it was really difficult getting through The Flash this season. Like, incredibly difficult, because there's a certain amount that they should have been balancing out, we've come to expect from that show. And so it's kind of like, well, you know, you can balance it out a lot better you can have the dark stuff, you can have a little bit of darkness, but at least have some stuff that's fun as well. You know, it doesn't have to be misery upon misery upon misery. And that's kind of what this turned into. There was nothing really about it, unlike like the Grodd two-parter and the Leonard stuff when he came in. Like, that was fun. But other than that, there wasn't really a lot about this show that was fun this season. And so I was just like, again, like Supergirl, a lot of potential, very disappointed in the execution.
Yeah, and that's not to say the Flash can't have dark elements, because, like, season one was about the murder of Barry's mother. Like, you know, there's dark elements, but you can still have a lighter tone to the show while dealing with darker elements. And they just, I think they decided that Grant Gustin cries really well on screen, so they were going to make him cry as often as they could this year. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was
delicious tears.
I mean, he cries very pretty, but
yeah,
he does,
but I mean, I gotta be honest, I watched the first episode, and after that, it took me a long while before I caught up, because it was really hard to deal with the whole Flashpoint thing.
And I mean, I liked that Flashpoint had repercussions for Legends, because Eobard's existence became, like, the Legion of Doom, which was fun, but that's not really the Flash after the first episode of the season.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So
maybe it wasn't the first episode. Maybe it was the first couple, but it changed so much. It was really hard to keep watching.
Yeah. So another thing we had happen towards the back half of the season was Caitlin became Killer Frost. She got injured during an attack on Star Labs and ends up, like, I don't know, having an aneurysm or going into cardiac arrest or something, and dies, and Julian takes off the necklace that's been suppressing her abilities, heals her, and she completely becomes Killer Frost and starts working for Savitar for a while. So how did we feel about Caitlin finally going full on Killer Frost for a while?
I mean, she pulled it off. Like, in terms of the actress, like nailing that role and the duality of it, like, she did an incredible job. So the thing that, like, really frustrates me about Caitlin and Killer Frost is that she's the only one, really, that doesn't have any choice in how she gets to use her powers. Everyone else has control over whether they are good or bad, essentially. But for her, it, like, fundamentally changes her DNA. And it's a little bit frustrating that one of the few female characters with powers on this show, when those powers come into play, it makes her cold as well. And I get that to an extent, but also it's just really frustrating because she's one of the few female characters with powers that gets to be a major part of the series. And so why is she, I don't know, but she played, like, she absolutely killed it, like, the role. Like, she did an incredible job. Like, she's so good at playing Caitlin and Killer Frost. Like, she's an incredible actress. But for me, it's just, like, frustrating that she's one of the only female characters that we get to see regularly with powers, and yet.
Did Ronnie Raymond have an anger management problem?
What?
Because he had, you know, warm powers, so if she's cold, then he should be hot.
Oh, right. I was like, I didn't know what you were getting at. Then I was like, wait, what? He was fine. He was all right. Then in that instance, yeah, absolutely. You should, I guess, assume that if it changes the genetic makeup of the character to be, like, really cold and unfeeling, then shouldn't the person who has the powers that are opposite to her be the opposite, so then become very overzealous and passionate and kind of hot-headed? And it doesn't happen in the reverse, so why does it happen specifically with her? And it's, like, that's frustrating to me. There's, like, a there's an internal logic, I guess, to the show that doesn't make a lot of sense in that instance, but it is what it is. She did very, very well with the role, but I find it a little frustrating.
I will say the thing that I do appreciate is that, like, they just didn't have Caitlin turn evil, like, because they keep giving her romances, which is its own annoyance, that, like, she keeps having failed romances each season. But I kept expecting them to, like, have her react poorly to a romance and, like, turn evil because of it. And I'm glad it, like, her being a villain was literally, like, not her. Like, her entire DNA was changing to become the way she did. So there was that, at least.
Yeah, there is that. I mean...
And we have a sense of hope by the end of the season that she's starting to take control of it herself.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we have the question, how many times can Tom Cavanaugh play a different version of Harrison Wells? We had HR this season, and he sacrificed himself to protect Iris from Savitar. So long, HR. I'd been never particularly liked you, so...
Liked his hat.
It was a very cunning hat. No.
Are we going to see another version of Harrison Wells next season, or are we just going to stick with, like...
Oh, Harry? Almost definitely. No, almost definitely.
That's a running gag.
Yeah. The Flash has the same problem with Tom Cavanaugh as the Arrowverse, just in general, has had with John Barrowman, in that they just want to keep using him over and over and over again. But, like...
I mean, right. Legends finally figured out how to use Barrowman, which was nice.
Yeah, that's true.
That was the first time they used him well since, like, season 2 of Arrow. But... Yeah, I mean, I've grown to like Earth 2 Harrison Wells, but...
Yeah, me too.
So I'm glad, like, he popped in and out a bit at the end of the season as well.
Yeah, I want him to stay.
Me too! I like him. And apparently he has some kind of illness that was teased at some point.
Hmm.
Didn't really...
Didn't catch... Go anywhere.
Played out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the season ends, they... Savitar gets defeated by getting shot in the back, because, you know, how that makes a lot of sense to defeat a sister. But they beat Savitar, Caitlin, like, takes her control back of her powers and everything. Everything seems to be great, and Barry and Iris are gonna get married, and then... The problem is that they emptied out that, like, prison in the Speed Force because they rescued Jay Garrick. And so somebody apparently has to go in, and so Barry enters the Speed Force again because he caused all the problems in the first place by creating Flashpoint. So the whole thing was his fault, so he's making amends by going into the Speed Force. The end. And they promise he'll be happy. So basically, they're sending him to heaven, and they're gonna pull a Buffy season 6 for the Flash season 4.
This is so stupid.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Makes me mad.
Well, again, it's kind of like that. It's the same problem that Supergirl has with the idea of Mon-El doing the sacrifice play, in that we know that they're coming back doesn't really hold the emotional weight that it should do, because there's no suspense there at all. We know that each of those characters is coming back, so therefore it's just kind of like, sure, okay, that's a thing. It's like... There's no real, hugely emotional resonance at the end of the season, because we know it's not going to stick. So we have the same problem again, in that we know that this character is coming back in the next season. We don't know how that absence is going to affect them, but that idea of them being gone, we know that it isn't going to last. So again, it's kind of that moment of like, this, it should be this huge, emotionally devastating moment of this sacrifice play in the finale, and mostly it's just like, it's okay, they'll probably be back in the premiere.
I suppose the biggest thing is, how has he been changed by this event?
Has he been changed for good?
Like the timeline. Dun dun dun.
Yeah.
All right. So, our theme for our return episode is disappointment. We're not mad, Supergirl Flash, we're just disappointed. But maybe also a little
bit. We don't like it. Change it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These shows, particularly these two shows, are supposed to be the happy ones, right? And
yeah.
They've been such downers.
Bring some joy next season,
yeah,
shows.
Please.
That's what we're looking for. We can forgive a lot when you make us happy. That's how Legends works. We forgive a lot because
make
it makes
smile,
us happy.
Please.
Yeah.
Give me Leonard.
Oh, man. Yes. I miss him.
He's going to be in some episodes we know of Legends next season. So.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad because I miss him. It was one of the things that I missed a lot of, like, this season.
Because I don't like being like,
and I get it. No, me either. I really want to get back. Like, the next episode is going to be significantly more positive, guys. We promise. But, yeah, this one particularly, both of these shows particularly, just, again, disappointing. A lot of potential, and it just didn't live up to it.
But we really enjoyed Arrow and Legends. So
oh, yeah.
That's
going to
be a gush fest in the next episode.
Like, by contrast, I enjoyed both Legends particularly, but I enjoyed both of those shows. Like, they really turned it around significantly, both of those shows. So it's going to be, we're going to have a fun time talking about how much we love that show, or both of those shows. So look out for, like, this is the gripe episode. The next episode's going to be the major hype episode, and then we'll be kind of somewhere in between for everything else, I guess. I'm gonna, I guess, run through, like, we have had some, like, feedback and people who have been on our Twitter account a little bit as well, so I'll run through some of these super 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 quickly, because yeah. So Steph, who's Steph's Francis on Twitter, says, not telling you what to do, but Hero Hype Podcast should come back to a Wonder Woman podcast and then leave in the night like it never happened. We're going to be staying, but there is going to be a Wonder Woman episode. So that is coming up. Because, wow, talk about things that made me happy. Wonder
so
Woman
happy.
Is one of those things. Yes. Andrew, who's Andrew S. O'Donnell on Twitter, said, I really thought that if anything could resurrect Hero Hype Podcast, it would be the Flash musical episode. Guess not. Crying emoji. It's like, we talked about the Flash musical episode in years, and we're back, so we're kind of resurrected. No, what is dead may never die.
What is dead may never die.
Yeah.
But rises again.
Yeah, we're back. We're back, and we're hopefully staying this time. Ev, who's defining random on Twitter, said, listening to old Hero Hype Podcast episodes, and man, I wish you guys had executive positions in all of the superhero movie industry. That'd be
us
nice.
Too.
I'd probably be getting paid a hell of a lot more if that was the case, so I would love that.
And the movies would be a lot better. At least the DC would.
Very, yeah. I won't read out the whole email, but we had an email that came through from Cammy, who was asking about doing, like, an in-depth discussion on Luke Cage, and it tying into, like, the other Netflix shows, and it does a standalone. We are going to be covering Luke Cage. That is another one that will be coming up. And Iron Fist as well, though I may have to rope in some other hosts to do that one with me, because some people have not seen it and I don't feel like I want to force them to see it. So
some of us finished Defenders and still feel really good about our choice to skip Iron Fist.
Yeah, so I probably will be reaching out to find some other people to come on to talk about Iron Fist, but yes. Yeah, there's a couple of things in here that we will probably get to. Like, there's another question about, like, why they never thought to tie in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to the Netflix shows. And so I guess I'll touch on that probably when we do our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode. But yeah, so we had a couple of bits of feedback, but we should be a little bit more active on Twitter soon as well. So if you start talking to us again, we'll be around. Some of them will make it onto the show. We might just reply on Twitter to others. But that's it. First episode back, a little bit lengthy, but, you know, I think we just needed to get a lot of what frustrated us about Supergirl and the Flash off our chests. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. As always, if you want to get hold of us, you can reach out on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can drop us an email to herohypepodcast@gmail.com. As always, I'm Danya.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Mike.
And we will see you very soon on our next episode. So bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.